Committee on Revenue will come to order for February 21st, 2007. I wanted to let you know that we're missing a couple of members today because of the wintertime illnesses that are going around. We'll hope that we see them both back tomorrow. And we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2388. Paul?
Mr. Chair, the House Bill 2388, it refers to the tax expenditure report, which was developed in 1995. And after we summarize it here and hear from the sponsor, we do have Department of Revenue here to walk us through that the latest report to give you a feel for how that's put together. But what the bill itself does is require that the House and Senate to be the revenue committees, the principal jurisdiction over matters of taxation, during the interim review the tax expenditures, the purpose of the tax expenditure, its effectiveness, its efficiency, the revenue impact of the tax expenditure, and that the committee, the interim committees, jointly prepare a written report setting forth the findings from that study. And then it breaks down kind of in a one-third categories the report itself. So in other words, you do one-third in each of the interims. One thing I would point out that we do have, under current statute, and I've made a copy of that, under actually the Legislative Revenue Officer statute, 173.80, if you look under 173.820, duties and powers, Legislative Revenue Officer shall, under little c there, ascertain facts and make recommendations to the Legislative Assembly concerning the Governor's Tax Expenditure Report. So this would clearly be within the purview of the officer's responsibilities, and as far as a fiscal impact, it would be something we would, if this bill passed, we would interpret as a major priority and do it within our existing resources.
Thank you. That's great to hear. I note that we have the sponsor of the bill here, Representative Esquivel. Would you like to be heard?
Do we have this one?
That's up to you, Representative.
As long as we don't take a vote on it, if I can be heard. Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. This is a bill that I've been thinking about last session because we have substantial numbers of credits within the state of Oregon, and being on revenue for the time that I was, understood that they're numerous, and some of them are very archaic, outdated, and some of them probably shouldn't even be there. What this does, this bill does not, 2388 does not, I repeat, does not make us do away with tax credits. What 2388 does is it gives us a 33% solution where we look at a third of all tax expenditures in a two-year period. The next two-year period, we'd go for the other third, and then the final two-year period, we'd look at the final third. So we'd cover all the tax expenditures, have a committee during the interim look into that, and have the people that benefit from these expenditures come in and explain to us, one, how many jobs are we creating, and what is Oregon getting out of this? I'm for tax expenditures, providing that we get a benefit within this state. I think that's great. If we aren't getting a benefit, we need to know that. We need to have people come in and tell us why we need to give an expenditure and a credit to them. So that's the bill in a nutshell. There isn't much. It isn't very difficult, this bill. It's pretty simplistic. So I guess I'm open for questions.
Great. Thank you, Representative. Are there questions? Representative Berger.
Yeah, Representative Esquivel, great idea. Is your vision that there would be a interim committee or interim committees as assigned for their expertise in that area? What's your vision? I'll be honest, I haven't read the bill yet. Okay.
That wouldn't take very long. Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I would think that you, the revenue in the House and the Senate, would be part of this. That's what I envision.
So follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
So this would be the interim committee that would hear each. Okay.
That's what I envision.
Okay.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I think this is an excellent opportunity for us to go back and examine some of these things. I recognize that other legislatures have empowered revenue to go back and do that. And I think that a combination of just diligently doing the kinds of things that we agreed to do this past interim, that is, start putting sunsets on some of these things. Begin to have measuring devices, matrices that we'll be able to actually follow and report on the performance of the various kinds of credits and the various kinds of tax expenditures. Then what happens is they become self-justifying. Once we find out that the buggy whip credit of the last centuries are really not creating a better buggy industry for Oregon and better livability, socioeconomic benefits for the people of the state of Oregon, then pretty soon you're able to go ahead and just allow those sunsets to occur. So I think that this, in conjunction with very diligent work on the part of the chairs of House and Senate Revenues, I think will get us to this end as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Thank you, Representative Esquivel. We appreciate your attendance today and your cogent and short explanation of the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we'll hear from the department now. It looks to me as though you've queued up an explanation on the tax expenditure report, which are certainly germane to this bill. Yes, please.
Chairman, committee members, my name is Damon Bell, Oregon Department of Revenue.
And my name is John Hart, also from the Oregon Department of Revenue.
We're here to provide some information concerning tax expenditures and the tax expenditure report. We'll provide some background about what tax expenditures are and about the report, followed with some examples that illustrating kind of the information that is displayed in the different tax expenditures, and then John will go into some of the process of generating the report, some other background, and show some numbers. Tax expenditure report exists as a result of Budget Accountability Act in 1995. That act required the tax expenditure report. There was a declarative statement that identified tax expenditures as being similar to direct expenditures and stated the tax expenditure report will allow tax expenditures to be debated in conjunction with online budgets. There's some other items that were mentioned in the declarative statement. Statutory definition of a tax expenditure that was lined out in the Act is a very broad definition and refers to any law of the federal government or of the state that exempts certain items from the impact of established taxes, including not limited to deductions, credits, subtractions, preferential tax rates. Essentially, that means that tax expenditures are items that give some kind of preferential treatment to certain groups, aside that deviates from an established base for the tax. So, for example, with personal income tax, we consider all income that Oregon is allowed to tax, and then applying the 5%, 7%, and 9% tax rates and that establishes the base for the tax. And any deviation from that base, such as a tax credit or a subtraction, constitutes a tax expenditure. The Act identified that the report must list all tax expenditures and provide certain information for each one, the statutory authority, a statement of purpose, estimates of the amount of revenue lost as a result of the tax expenditure or revenue foregone, a budget program or function for the tax expenditure, and an evaluation, evaluating each expenditure for its fiscal effectiveness in addressing the purpose and whether or not it achieves the purpose. That's, where are we going now? It also required that tax expenditures which sunset in the next biennium be identified, and that the governor provide a recommendation for each as to whether it be the sunset be allowed or extended. Okay. Here we have just a picture of a tax expenditure. If you have your books with you, you can find it on page 96. We just wanted to point out some of the items that are listed at the top, you know, just a title and a number for each one. The statutory references, the dates, and sorry, hold on a second. I got lost. The date enacted, and let me get going here. Year enacted, sorry. Revenue impacts, that's in the bar going across, and on the left you have the impact on corporate income tax, and then the impact on personal income tax, and then the total. And this is for income tax. This might be laid out differently for different tax programs. A description of the tax expenditure just gives some brief background on what it's doing. It might provide, if it's a credit, it might have some explanation of some of the requirements or what's needed to meet to get that credit. The purpose, which is sometimes difficult for us to know what the purpose is on tax expenditures because it's not necessarily always listed out, and some of the expenditures relate to very old laws, as we buggy whip example. I don't think there's necessarily really a credit for that. and a statement of who benefits from the tax expenditure, where we try to provide some kind of description of how many people benefit from this or how many corporations and to what degree they benefit. And then an evaluation section, which is written by state agencies to try and address, as we said earlier, the fiscal effectiveness of tax expenditure and whether or not it achieves its purpose.
Mr. Chair, are you welcoming questions?
Sure, yes.
Gentlemen, just for clarification, the Department of Revenue does everything but the evaluation, or who? What agencies do which parts?
Chairman, Representative, the Department of Revenue generally does most of the revenue estimates, the identifying statutes, the year enacted, the sun, you know, those mechanical aspects of it, and we in general write the description, the purpose, and the who benefits, and those are, of course, that also reviewed by the agency that has subject matter responsibility, and then that material is sent to the agencies, and they can provide evaluation, comment on it. Often agencies are the ones that help us with identifying a purpose of a tax expenditure or cleaning up a description.
Okay, thank you.
And I have a question while we're on this issue. One of the things that we've started this year is as we pass out bills that have to do with tax credits, is asking the agencies that are related or connected with that issue to provide us a a matrix of questions that they would use in an evaluation of the effectiveness of the tax credit. And then we've decided that we would include that in our committee policy and pass those matrices back to the agency for their work. It would be appropriate, would it not, for their responses to those questions to be included in this evaluation section, would it not?
We could certainly include that in this section.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. Paul, is there are there any of the credits listed in the tax expenditure book, any of those that we have any kind of dynamic analysis on? Is it, in other words, is it all static? It appears that the reporting here is just from the returns themselves. So a credit to hire more handicapped persons or a credit to assist people in get employment and remain in employment just shows the amount of expenditure itself, does not come back and try and portray any dynamic analysis that saves us X amount of other dollars, even if it isn't the amount of the credit, in keeping those people employed and on their payrolls.
Representative Butler, I think that's true. I mean, if you're talking about evaluation of whether it's fiscally effective or not, you would be looking at that tax expenditure versus an outright appropriation for some similar and see what the impact is. Now, I don't know of anything that does that. There is references to some economic effects and some of the credits in terms of jobs and employment and so forth. For example, the Strategic Investment Program.
Mm-hmm.
That's a property tax exemption. So there are specific cases when that does show up in the evaluations, but unless there's something I'm not aware of, I don't know of a situation where you're looking at an expenditure versus this credit and say, well, this one helps this many people and this one helps a different number.
For me, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, now that we're examining actual performance measurements, if this wouldn't be a place under the evaluation, number one, where you could at least make reference to some of those performance measures, the matrices that we've come up with on 2210, for instance, with regard to the biofuels.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I'm wondering if, without drawing any judgment from it at all, if a person could say, and oh, by the way, after reading these performance measurements, oh, by the way, this was to assist to keep people employed that otherwise would have difficulty becoming employed. There may be some socioeconomic benefit there. We make no judgment on that. Is that? I'm wondering if that couldn't be amongst that evaluation without truly evaluating it, but saying, mm-hmm. Here's where you could go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think right now, and you folks can correct me if you have a different opinion, but I think the evaluations are don't have a real set structure to them. I mean, it's kind of the agencies looking at it from a specific standpoint. So that may be one thing that would help to provide some structure to it, where they would say, here are the questions that should be addressed, even if we don't have all the data to answer that. I think that's where you're going.
That's exactly right.
And so I think that would certainly be possible to put some more structure to it.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be appropriate to at least consider that and future analysis work that's done on the tax expenditures so that folks could start to try and connect the dots as to why it is that we've done. And again, I think that will become self-evident once you start to include the actual performance measurements themselves.
Mm-hmm. What was it you were trying to accomplish?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Butler. I just a quick comment on that. I think that a bill like 2388, whether we adopt this proposal or something else, that would systematically review the tax expenditures, that would be the time in which you would try to work on putting these things in, and so you could have ongoing measurements. And we've been discussing this in sort of a general way during this session. Exactly how to get there, I don't think the committee's actually had a conversation about yet, but I think that's a reasonable thing for us to have a conversation about and see whether we want to add something to the statute on the tax expenditure report or or handle it in a less formal way. I don't know at this point, but I think your suggestions are good ones, and we ought to consider them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I may, just possibly this interim evaluation group that is being proposed in the subject 2388 could come back and assist with the actual establishment of the performance measurements that they think that they were trying to accomplish. That could be voted on then session by session to see, you know, what really were the performance measurements that folks are bringing the people in that advocate on behalf of the credits. Here we have home mortgage. You could certainly then call in the housing community services. Those folks could tell us whether or not this actually is accomplishing a greater benefit for home ownership in Oregon. And if we look at the home ownership in Oregon, we find out that it is very poor. You know, maybe rather than a home mortgage interest, we ought to be considering that in addition to something else or something else entirely. I don't know.
Good point. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, Chairman, committee members. So I was just going to mention that the evaluations, we do try and find agencies that have subject matter knowledge. And I had another thought, but maybe I'll remember it in a minute. Down at the bottom is...
You can continue a moment. Go ahead. Thank you.
Down at the bottom, it does list what agency has provided the evaluation for the tax expenditure. Now, this is a property tax expenditure. I just wanted to throw this one up because it's a little different in what's some of the information presented. There is up towards the top, right above the table, we provide an estimate of the assessed value that's being exempted, or exempted assessed value. It's a difficult concept sometimes. This is the amount of value that would have been assessed and on the tax roll were the tax expenditure not to exist. And there is the loss estimate, which is the revenue loss to districts as a result of the tax expenditure. And there is a shift number provided there, which is the amount of tax burden which is shifted from the exempt entity to other taxable entities in that taxing district. And that's a result of, for example, a bond which needs to bring in a certain amount of revenue, and a levy is assessed based on the property value in the district, and if something is exempted, someone else has to pick up the difference. Okay. And on the left there, just above that bottom box, is you will sometimes see an in lieu statement, and that means that there's an exemption in place, and in lieu of some other kind of tax or fee that is assessed. In this example, it's small watercraft. They're mobile things. They're difficult to assess value on. And so in lieu of paying property tax, there is a fee that they, a registration fee. And we try and provide some information. That's on just a handful of tax expenditures have that. But if you see it, you can...
Representative Berger, thank you.
At the danger, Mr. Chair, of getting hung up on individual items within the tax expenditure, why would there be a property tax on a small boat when we don't tax personal property?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, we identify tax expenditures based on specific exemptions in statute, and so having a tax expenditure in the book doesn't mean that we believe there should be a tax or that anyone believes there should be a tax. It's that by the statutory definition of a tax expenditure, we have an Oregon law that exempts this from taxation.
So because in law this is exempted, you have to do a tax exemption report on it?
Correct.
Oh, okay. It's only in the government would we get there. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Now I'll go over sunsets briefly. These are tax expenditures that cease to exist during the over the course of the next biennium. The Act, the Budget, the Accountability Act, required the identification of these and the governor's recommendation, as I said before. And now I'll show a slide with the, this is the actual sunsets. This is on page 7 in your book. There are, I believe, 15 tax expenditures we've identified as going away sometime during the next biennium. You can find those listed there, along with, over at the far right, the governor's recommendation on whether to allow them to sunset or to extend the sunset. And now I'll turn it over to John if there aren't questions about this.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is John Hart. I'm an economist at the Department of Revenue, and I thank you for the opportunity to come before you today. Some of the questions that you had earlier have actually touched on some of what I was going to talk about. I think I'm relieved by that, because that means I can go a little shorter. The first thing I'd like to talk about is the role that the Department of Revenue plays in creating the tax expenditure report. Now that you have an idea what the tax expenditures are, I want to start with that role and then give some highlights from the current book. So our first role at the Department of Revenue is to identify the new, modified, or deleted expenditures. We get a lot of assistance from your staff in LRO with identifying the new tax expenditures and the modified tax expenditures. We do agonize sometimes over whether one statute constitutes two tax expenditures because it has two definitions of something that's exempt, or whether two statutes constitute one tax expenditure because they're both research credits. One's called the alternative research credit, the other one is the research credit. So in that way, the number of tax expenditures, while not exactly arbitrary, is kind of in flux all the time, and we have a lot of issues like that as we identify and write up the description and the purpose for each of these. For most of the tax expenditures, we produce the estimates of revenue loss. For new or modified tax expenditures, we utilize information from the Legislative Revenue Office unless we have new information on those. For gas tax and weight and mile tax, the Department of Transportation does those estimates, and there's a few others. I think the beer and wine tax, if we have any, would be done by OLCC. We coordinate with the agencies to gather information. A lot of the credits, for instance, have certifications done by the Department of Energy or by the Department of Environmental Quality, and we get information from those agencies on the number of certifications. We get any comments that they would have about the other elements of the tax expenditure, and we coordinate the evaluations. We treat the evaluations as the domain of the agencies in most cases. There are a few, actually, tax expenditures that are where the purpose is to ease tax administration, and the Department of Revenue does evaluate those. And we also coordinate review by the Governor's Office and by BAM. In making the revenue estimates, as we heard earlier, the estimates in the book are static estimates. So for the strategic investment program, the estimate is the property tax that isn't raised because of the program, but we do not go into, now we have this many more jobs that are producing this much more income tax and raising the value of properties in the area. We don't go into that. We evaluate one tax expenditure at a time, and so when we make the revenue estimate for a credit, we simulate taxes as if that one credit didn't exist anymore. And so there's going to be interactions between expenditures. If you increase deductions, you actually lower the value of other credits, but those interactions can't be necessarily reflected here. So in that way, it's also dangerous to add up the impacts of each of the expenditures, because the total impact, if you eliminated all of them, may be either higher or lower than the total. that makes sense.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Butler.
Thank you. So as I understand that exactly, so the company that may have been entitled to use a pollution control tax credit and actually had earned a pollution control tax credit of $25 million, that's way outside the range, but they'd earned that much, even though they didn't use that much because they didn't have any taxable income, you'd still report the $25 million credit?
We only report the amount that it would affect their tax. So if they had a $25 million credit and a $15 tax liability, they would pay $10, and we would report the cost of that credit as
$5. $5, thank you.
The revenue estimates also might not be exactly identical in every case to a budget impact, but in a lot of cases they are. With pollution control credit, for instance, if you want to encourage pollution control with $8 million, you can reduce revenues by $8 million. You can write checks for $8 million. There's going to be some administrative differences in the costs of doing that. A lot of times it's easier to either do it as a direct expenditure or through the tax system. A lot of times the tax system is more complicated. But the budget impact is, because we call these tax expenditures, because often the budget impact is the same when you reduce revenues by $100 as when you write a check for $100. And as Damon mentioned, with the property tax estimates, we have both the loss from having specially assessed or exempted property, and we have the shift. And the shift is not money that's lost, but as Damon mentioned, if you have a specific dollar amount on a bond or a local option levy that you're trying to raise, if one property is exempt, then all the other properties pick up a piece of that, and so the revenue is shifted to those other properties. Now, how to use the tax expenditure report, we do have 362 tax expenditures. I was talking earlier and said we could almost make a calendar with this, with one tax expenditure a day. There's a lot of information in this book. To help you look through the book and find the information that you're looking for, we have three indexes. We have an index by tax program. So the income tax comes first. Those are the tax expenditures that begin with a number one. Property tax is next. That begins with a two, etc. We have an index by the budget program or function on page 19. So the education tax expenditures are together, and the economic and community development tax expenditures are together. And then lastly, at the end of the book, on page 377, we do have a index by title. Again, we often struggle with what the title of the tax expenditure should be. So if you know it by one title, we try to keep it the same title next year. But often these don't have titles in statute, and so we come up with pollution control credit. I think we call the energy credit energy facilities, where it's known more widely as the business energy tax credit, or BETC. We have 16 chapters, one chapter for each tax that has a tax expenditure. Each chapter contains first a description of the tax that gives kind of a good background on what the tax is meant to do and how much the tax brings in. And then within each chapter, we have a detail for each expenditure that applies to that tax. Now for some highlights. I cautioned against adding these up, but for comparison, the only way to really compare the magnitude of these is to add them up. So here they are. The first, you might note that for income tax, both personal and corporate, the estimated revenues at the time we produced the book for 07-09 was $12.9 billion. And the revenue loss from tax expenditures was $9.9 billion roughly. And then that's broken down into exclusions, adjustments, subtractions, credits, and other provisions. We'll go into the top 10 on income and property tax next and show you how concentrated some of these are. For income tax expenditures, the top 10 are listed here, home mortgage interest being the largest income tax expenditure at $972 million in revenue impact for 07-09.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
That would be, I'm assuming that revenue impact would be the total mortgage interest expense times some tax rate. You got 3.57 or 3.579 or 5.79. What's
the? I don't know specifically how this was calculated, but Mr. Chair, Representative, but in general, when we do the income tax expenditures for which we have good data, and this is one of those, we look at what the cost was in prior tax years. And so we can simulate, based on individual returns, what the cost was. And then we use some way to predict what that cost will be in future tax years. When we produce the 07-09 book, we do that in 06. And so we have good information on tax years through 2004. So we are making a prediction, but that prediction is based primarily on history. We do have some estimates at the federal level that we can use to trend ours forward if that's the way that the economist who makes this estimate thinks is most appropriate.
Mr. Chair, I am a little bit concerned about that because I don't know how it's done, but I do know that particularly amongst the seniors and the more elderly Oregonians who are now expending money into corpus, they don't have enough income to live off of, they will still be paying property taxes, they will still be taking or still be reflecting a personal exemption, but they're, because of the high cost of medical and those kinds of things, they will be paying zero taxes. So I do have a concern about how that reflects, and would hope that the model that you're using would in fact take into the fact that yes, they have a personal exemption here, which is $1,000, let's say, but that the net tax effect of that is zero because even without a personal exemption, they wouldn't be paying income taxes because they have $25,000 of medical expenses and only $20,000 of income.
Mr. Chair, Representative, for the years that we're looking at actual data, I know that our model takes that into account.
Good.
As we predict future years, there's other issues like that effect might grow, or you might have rising interest rates and at the same time rising mortgage applications to buy boats and refinance, that type of thing. And so all of that has to be taken into account as we make our estimates.
Thank you. Representative Wett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to inquire whether that tax expenditure was available to residences beyond the primary home.
It covers mortgage interest.
Yeah.
Home mortgage interest.
Which so second, secondary, third,
yes, it does.
Fourth, fifth, 27th.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chairman, committee members, I believe it's on two primary residences or two residences.
We'll get more information on that later, I suspect. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Witt.
Okay. From this slide, you can see that the top 10 expenditures are 69% of the total. And so there's a lot of concentration. If you add up the total, there's a lot of concentration in a few. But that's not to dismiss the others as unimportant. Some of the other, like the energy credits and the pollution control credits, we have a lot more certifications, so there's a lot more eligibility to use these credits than has been taken. Those might rise in importance in the future. And so while the percentage made up by any one of those smaller ones may be small, they may still also be important. For property tax expenditures, the top 10 itself is heavily dominated by the expenditure of not taxing intangible personal property. That one expenditure makes up 60% of all the property tax expenditures, and the top 10 in total make up 96%. So in summary, we have the tax expenditure report available for you that provides detailed information by each chapter about the taxes that are involved, gives background on those taxes, and provides detailed information on each of the expenditures. The tax expenditures are reported with the budget because they are similar to direct spending, as we discussed. And we work with over 30 agencies to produce the report. We also would like any feedback you have about the usefulness of the report and any ways we might change it to serve you better.
Chairman, Representatives, I was just going to mention probably something I should have said at the beginning, that the concept of tax expenditures was formalized in the 60s by a assistant secretary of treasury, and since then it's led to the federal government producing two tax expenditure reports. About half the states produce tax expenditure reports, and in fact countries around the world produce them, recognizing the usefulness of having that report to use in conjunction with the budget to evaluate overall government expenditures.
Thank you very much. Further questions? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like the single sales factor under income tax is included in here for the first time that I remember seeing it, and yet it's not evaluated. It says not evaluated, and there seems to be some sort of dispute going on about whether it really belongs in here or not. Can you comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, we were asked by the governor's staff to put this item in the report. There is some dispute as to whether it is a tax expenditure or not. The normal definition of a tax expenditure is an exception to established taxes. And the established tax for corporate income tax is a tax rate multiplied by apportioned income. And so, in one sense, the apportionment formula is part of the established tax. The other side of that is that this is meant to benefit specific companies, and so some folks wanted to have this included in the report. As for the evaluation, there's a couple of reasons it's not evaluated. I think the primary one is that the purpose in statute for the single sales factor is to fairly apportion income, and we didn't think there was an agency that could comment on whether income was being fairly apportioned. And there's actually some mention in the description of that tax expenditure that apportioning income is kind of an ongoing debate as to what fair is.
Well, Mr. Chair, follow up. My recollection when we actually was here long enough ago that I remember passing this, that we had a lot of discussion about the merits of not taxing payroll or things that we wanted to encourage. So I thought there were actually some purposes stated for doing this that could really be evaluated now that it's been in effect for a little while.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, if you believe that you have a purpose statement that could be evaluated to by, I suspect, economic development might be the appropriate, we'd be happy to change the purpose statement in the book.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chair, that would make sense to go back and take a look at that.
I agree, Representative Rosenbaum. It's pretty clear that part of what the legislature was thinking about at the time was to encourage people to locate in Oregon and to pay payroll here, and the fact that they had sales in other places would mean that those sales would not be taxed in Oregon, and by that method encourage people to set up here. So I think that was pretty clear. Now whether it was actually written down that way in the tax law or not, I don't know.
But Mr. Chair, we do have volumes of material from that discussion.
From that, yes, we do. I'm sure we do. Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think this points up some of the limitations of a tax expenditure report because decisions have to be made. This was a tax policy enacted by this body.
Yes.
And it wasn't, I don't think, viewed quite that way when we, by some of us it was and by some of us it wasn't.
Correct.
But I think that the Department of Revenue is caught sort of in the crosshairs because there isn't an apportionment. It's just a different apportionment. So is that an expenditure or not? Some would view it as an expenditure and some would just view it as simply a tax policy that was decided upon by this body. So these poor guys are caught in the crosshairs of that, and that's one of the limitations of this report. It doesn't tell the whole story.
Thank you. I think that's also an accurate statement.
Appreciate
that, Representative Butler.
And there is an abundance of evidence now that the actual single sales apportionment factor has really got a lot more folks on the income tax rolls as to those corporations, and certainly the collections of corporate taxes have been some evidence of that.
Some people are paying more.
Yep.
Yes. Further for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you very much. We appreciate your coming and presenting us with this material today. It will help us as we review this telephone book, otherwise called the Tax Expenditure Report.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, here's where we should go first with this one.
We'll just start
from the top. All right. Great. Well, we have several people who want to be heard on this measure today, and I think we'll just take them in the order that they signed up so that we can hear from everyone. Kathy Eaton and perhaps Betty McChesney-House would come up at the same time, and we could hear from you. Kathy, it's great to see you again.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the governance chair for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. There is some written testimony. I will sort of skip through it. You can read it. But thank you for the opportunity to discuss the important issue of tax expenditures and the proposed regular reviews, which are outlined in House Bill 2388. The League strongly supports a state government that is adequately financed in order to provide essential services to its citizens. Currently, Oregon's fiscal stability suffers from the non-receipt of billions of dollars, which are given away as tax credits. In other words, we...
Kathy, if you would, just move the microphone a little bit further away from you so that it doesn't...
Doesn't boom?
It doesn't boom quite so much. Thank you. That's much better.
Is that better? Thank
you.
In other words, the League believes that Oregon is bleeding from tax credits, and we think something should be done about it. Some of the tax breaks do have high social value. Some have encouraged economic development. However, the 362, and it's gone up from the 355, tax expenditures are still being given for programs that are well beyond the startup phase. 2388 will establish a regular review program over a six-year period for all of the tax expenditures. We think this is a two-pronged project. We think that the review is excellent to look at all of them over a regular period. But after that, when the recommendations are made by the interim committees, we would hope that would ensure good discussion then at the next legislative session about those recommendations and not just sit on the shelf, as sometimes this happens with tax expenditure reports. They've been done in the past. We think that the whole issue is so important that we want to make sure that doing a review is fine, but that in the long run something is done with the recommendations which come out of that review. The loss of the general fund revenue for tax expenditures should decrease. That would be the purpose, we believe, in having this review, and it should be possible to determine the need for continuing tax credits. The League supports 2388 as a plausible program to address a revenue problem and give support to state services. We urge you to carefully consider House Bill 2388 and move it forward. Thank you, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Questions for Kathy?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I wondered if the League of Oregon voters, or the League of Women Voters of Oregon, had any specific credits in mind specifically that are well beyond the startup phase?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler. We have been working in conjunction with the Oregon Revenue Coalition, which has over the last two sessions identified some tax credits that they feel and we feel with them can do this. And I think perhaps Lori Wilmer Wheeler may be talking about those more specifically. There are too many for me to go into detail, Representative Butler. I think there are some, perhaps some pollution tax credits that have been given over a long period of time, and their purpose has been satisfied, and those are the kinds of things that we feel you should look at.
Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon. Chair Barnhart and members of the Revenue Committee, I'm Betty House. I'm the chair of the AAUW of Oregon Public Policy Committee. AAUW of Oregon, with approximately 2,000 members and branches throughout Oregon, qualified to support House Bill 2388. Not my day for talking. Over the past three sessions, AAUW of Oregon and its members have looked at the proliferation of the tax expenditures or tax breaks or tax credits in layperson's terms. We are concerned that the number and the amount of these credits harm the state's ability to provide for the common welfare of those who live in Oregon. We applaud the idea of critical look at all of the tax credits. However, we think that the expenditure of otherwise collectible tax dollars should be authorized by the Ways and Means Committee, which has the oversight of other state spending. The Ways and Means Committee and its subcommittee are provided with information regarding many of the programs that are related to these tax credits that are impacted by the loss of revenue as a result of the credit. Let us give you an example. The small watercraft expenditure, 2056, when the exemption from paying personal property tax on boats was authorized in 1959, there were no computers. The purpose of the exemption was to avoid the administrative problems of dealing with a very mobile property. However, we now have computers. The Marine Board had no trouble sending out renewal notices for registration fees, so why could they not send personal property tax bills? It is estimated that the loss to the state is about $30 million. You may ask why I picked this fee out. This bill would directly affect one of our public policy committee members' household because they own a boat. We don't want to point out, even as an example, something that wouldn't affect our members. And I'm the member with the second house, so there you have it. We think the tax exemptions would be justified in relation to the budget and go through the same process. Thank you. I'm open for questions.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I handed Paul a note. I just wondered if there's any federal ongoing committees taking a look at some of these, the second residence, the interest on second residence, or the property taxes on second residence. Are there any federal committees that are looking at this issue of the sale of one personal residence every 2 years in one day? Anything that we're aware of, Paul, that would start to give us some assistance from the top down driven?
I'm not aware of anything, Vice Chair Butler. We have had this question asked frequently in terms of the potential revenue impact of just restricting the mortgage interest deduction to primary residence. So we do have the numbers and what we'd estimate, but those are estimated indirectly. I'm not aware of any activity at the federal level that would try to narrow that down and look at the use of that of that tax expenditure. But we can look into it and see what we can find.
Thank you. Great, thank you.
Chair Barnhart, I'd like to add one other thing. We were talking about the senior citizens, and I think that's sort of a dichotomy in a way, because as a senior citizen, you start to put your money away and start to buy things. Particularly, men like to go fishing, so they buy a boat. Women want to go travel across the country, so they say, let's buy an RV. And at the same time, we're allowed to take off all those medical expenses that incur as we do all of our wonderful activities. So even though our income isn't going up, our expenditures are really going out. So it's really an interesting lifestyle at the end.
Mr. Chair, that's why we don't tax boats, is because the men want those. Oh, we do tax the RVs.
Y'all mean.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies. We appreciate your testimony today. This next panel will be is an interesting one. Mr. Craven, Ms. Whalen, please. Mr. Craven.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association, Oregon Council. Having been present at the creation of the Budget Accountability Act in 1995, I've spent a lot of time looking at this report, eagerly analyzing it every biennium when it comes out. And we've had numerous runs up this mountain in this room over the years. And I just have a few observations and suggestions. One, you may wish, prior to going down this route, to contact a couple of former chairs of the House Revenue Committee, Representative Strobeck and Representative John Schoon, who both made an effort, a noble effort, to go down this road, and I think we got rid of fish gleaning. There was a tax credit for fish gleaning. The crop gleaning people came out in great force to protect their credit, but the fish gleaners were not well represented in the room, and thus they lost their tax credit. We couldn't find out if anyone actually did any fish gleaning, but not to make light of it, it is difficult to do this task. I think you can all envision that theoretically saying we're going to, you know, take a fine-tooth comb through all these tax breaks and we're going to get rid of the ones that aren't any good anymore is great in theory, and the day you actually do this, this room fills up rather quickly for some of you who may have been through that in the past. You do have some people that have tried it in the past and been down the road, and you might want to touch bases with them. I think you saw in some of the charts, again, it, when we talk about it in the macro sense as opposed to when you really get down to it, you saw that chart of the top 10. Those were, I didn't see, just putting on my business hat, I didn't see any business tax breaks in that top 10. Those are very popular, widely used, very expensive, as it were, almost embedded expectations of your constituents in things like mortgage home interest and employer paid medical benefits and the Oregon personal exemption credit. You get to that, the total of this whole thing very quickly in about a couple of dozen personal income tax breaks. In fact, my analysis, and I didn't run the numbers on the new report, but 2 years ago, if you look at the income tax side, and you got income tax and property tax in two sections of the book, you look at the income tax side, 97% of the value of everything in the book on income tax side accrues to personal income tax payers. So 3% is what are tax expenditures for the corporate side, 97% are for the individual side. That doesn't mean 3% of $9 billion isn't a reasonable number. It just means this debate has sometimes been characterized as the bulk of all these tax expenditures are special interest tax breaks, but those special interests include people who own homes, who have health care from their employer, who are on a pension, who receive Social Security. Those are the bulk of the special interest recipients of Oregon tax expenditures. Having said that, a couple of particulars from some of the previous testimony. I noticed we're still whipping the pollution control tax credit, but last I checked, that sunsetted. And unless you're going to resurrect that like Lazarus in this room, this session, I guess continuing to point out that it's one of the horrible poster children of this debate, we may want to move on to small watercraft or something more appropriate. I'm sorry. A couple of other things. If you were to do this analysis and spend time, and you are, if you pass this bill as is, you're asking your staff in the interim to do 120 analyses in the precious time that you have during the interim, because it says, I mean, there's 362, do the math. It mandates, rather than picking major battles or picking things that maybe the committee really wanted to work on, you're going to slug through 120 of these each biennium for the next three biennia and try to come to some conclusion about it. It's a big task, the way the bill is currently printed. When we, in a sense, do that already through the process involving Department of Revenue that your staff has input into, economic development, the governor's staff all have input into the current process, essentially we'll be duplicating it, and I just wanted to point that out. A lot of the tax expenditures or tax credits, I know we get these words a little jumbled up sometime, many of them do have sunsets in current law, and not all. And that's fair, not all. Many of them do and are reviewed on a regular basis by this committee and this body, or else they go away. So including such poster children as the pollution control tax credit, the reason it is sunsetting because it has a sunset on it. So that's something to consider, too, of analyzing things that already are teed up in a 2 to 4 year basis to have regular analysis may be a duplication of effort. Finally, the one thing I think it's important to point out, and you saw it, it went by very quickly on one of the slides. A lot of the value of the dollar value of what's in this book is driven by connectivity to the federal tax code. Now, people can argue, and certainly those of you who were around last session know we had up till, I think it was 4 a.m. on the final day of session, a little conversation about federal reconnect. You probably don't ever want to hear the word again. But a lot of the dollar value in here, including on the personal and business side, is driven by connectivity to the Internal Revenue Code. And whether or not you want to review all that and open all that up, as opposed to maybe if you're going to do an exercise to focus on elements of the Oregon Tax Code that you do own, Oregon tax credits, Oregon tax deductions, Oregon exemptions, may be a way to narrow the scope of the effort rather than reviewing the entire Internal Revenue Code and coming to judgments about the efficacy of congressional enactments. So just a suggestion and observation. And finally, I just a couple of comments on the single sales factor. I think if you read the page, and I lent my book, there is an analysis in the book about that. And the single sales factor, if you remember your briefing from the first couple of weeks of session, results from a former uniform system in the states to apportion corporate income for multi-state companies. It used to be a so-called three-factor formula, property, sales, and payroll. To include that for the first time in the tax expenditure book this time around, I would agree with the Department of Revenue staff that it is, and actually the text in the book says this is a bit of an argument as to whether it should be in the book at all. This body first changed from the three-factor formula in 1989 when we went to double-weighted sales. If double-weighted sales is a diversion from the perfect system, then it should have been in the book from the first day the book was written. And 2 years ago we were at 70% and then 80%. So all of a sudden Oregon, as you all voted on last session, moves to 100% apportionment, and all of a sudden it gets labeled a tax expenditure. I guess we would disagree with that inclusion in the book. And there is a nice little argument in there about that dispute, whether it even belongs in the book, since states, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, have the ability to apportion income as they see fit. There are only 10 states left that use the three-factor formula. So essentially, they are the deviants from the vast majority of states who adopted either a double-weighted or higher-weighted sales factor. So just a comment on that. So that's... Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Craven. Questions for Mr. Craven?
I just have one, Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler?
Thank you. Jim, we're following now a policy, or going to work towards a policy of including matrices relative to what it is, performance measurements that we need to try and measure the true benefit of these kinds of things. Not that in the process of having sunsets, folks didn't come forward and espouse those ideas of what they thought they were gaining as a result of the fact that they were encouraging the continued use of those credits. Does the American Electronic Association have any feel as to wanting to participate in adding some of the the kinds of performance measurements on some of these credits mm-hmm. that you've advocated for in the behalf and, but in the past?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, we'd be pleased to be part of any kind of dialogue that you thought was necessary. It is a caution. I think you've already figured that out today of saying we're going to set up performance measurements for tax expenditures and then actually do the figuring out. You know, it's a big jump from wanting to do it and being able to do it. But I don't think it's something that people shrink from. I mean, that's partly what we, I think, do in this committee, or you do in this committee, and I think your new rule about at least trying to set, if not specific performance measurements when you enact a bill, but to set some general policy statement as to why you're doing it. I mean, you kind of think, well, we should have been doing it all along, perhaps, but having that as an explicit rule this session, I think, is a good improvement.
Follow up. Thank you. We have follow up.
And I guess, I guess the kinds of things that we've talked about in the past, we've said this is good because we think that we can bring or that we can keep industries that are here, that we can keep them in the state of Oregon. They will employ 500 people per plant, and 10 plants is 5,000 jobs in the state of Oregon. And that's the really, I think those are measurable kinds of things, or at least estimatable kinds of things, that if at the end of 5 years of that credit, all of the companies that we were trying to target have left Oregon for whatever reason, then that's a pretty good indication that maybe that particular type of tax credit really wasn't successful.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I'm not sure in advocating various tax changes or structural changes over the years that at least I have come in here and promised you X amount of jobs. So I'd be a little hesitant to talk about there's going to be five companies at 264 jobs over the next 4 years or else you ought to repeal it. But I know where you're going, and I think it's a legitimate debate.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, for your record, Lori Wimmer-Wayland. I am here both wearing two hats, one as the government relations consultant for the Oregon Education Association and its 46,000 members, and also as the third session now, the chair of the Oregon Revenue Coalition, which is an ad hoc group of more than 100 organizations and individuals, including some public officials, who have joined together to speak to you all each session about revenue policies that we think are important. And in that capacity, I've included with my testimony a document that's, it's the second page, Oregon Revenue Coalition Criteria for Tax Breaks. And this is something that evolved from our organization as a way of thinking thoughtfully about which ones actually serve a state's interest or public policy purpose that all of us could agree are good public policies. And among them, not only the number of jobs created by a particular business tax break, but the efficiency level as measured by cost per job. If the job could be purchased, if the amount per job is actually higher than the salary for the worker, obviously one could argue that that's not an efficient use of money. And so that's what we mean in a cost-effective manner on that bullet point. But there are a number of public purposes that we think tax breaks often serve, and the question then becomes, as a secondary one, whether or not it's best served through a direct service or policy program or through a tax break. And I think you've heard some discussion about that from others who've testified. We're here to support this bill, House Bill 2388. Because we believe that this is something that a number of us have asked for a number of years, and it feels like it's a new day here in Oregon. As some of you may know, the Oregon Revenue Coalition published a study in 2003, which we are about to update, which takes a crack at the very difficult question that Mr. Craven just warned you about. And we did say in that we felt that there were ways to approach this task, to take a look at these tax breaks, not only to find out whether or not they are serving their purpose, but whether or not they are still, in today's terms, the best way to take a look at serving those needs. Tax breaks, of course, narrow the tax base, and so those who are left to pay more. So it makes it a very important accountability and efficiency measure for the state of Oregon. And we believe that both through the rules of this committee and through this particular bill, you are headed on a pathway to be more efficient and more accountable in the way you approach this kind of tax policy. We applaud you for it. We believe that this bill does begin the conversation about the best way to determine whether tax breaks remain on the book, not necessarily for the purpose of raising revenue. Sometimes it is simply about the policy content itself. But also because there is a fairness question in our research with the public at large, we know that at least there is a perception, if not a reality, that there isn't a fair distribution of the tax responsibility between different classes of taxpayers. And a review such as this can also help elucidate that question more. We would also like to offer some friendly amendments if you move forward with this bill. We believe that automatic sunset provisions are a good idea, as Representative Butler suggested. We also believe that a tax break should be extended beyond that sunset level only if it survives a review. We think that in addition to a review, it would be useful for tax breaks to have clawback provisions. That is, if they claim to produce a particular result and fail to do so, the clawback provision says then they go away automatically, not for time, not because they've reached their limit in the calendar, but because they have not satisfied their purpose. An example of one on the record, on the books right now, that does that is the Strategic Investment Program property tax break, and those are negotiated with local governments to offer a whole set of contractual obligations in exchange for that tax break. And there have been companies who have failed to meet the terms of that obligation and have had that break withdrawn. That's what we mean by clawbacks. We also believe that it would be useful for tax breaks to undergo a ways and means process, given that there are two ways to provide services, programs, and benefits to Oregonians, one through direct service and one through tax expenditures, that we ought to scrutinize tax breaks as we scrutinize policy programs. The rationale for this is that of the taxes levied in Oregon, 56 cents go back out in breaks. That is to say, we spend less of every levied tax dollar on those services and programs than we do on these breaks. And so they have been growing at a rate more than services. And so they are the growth of government. This is part of that conversation. So that's part of Oregon's true overall budget. I would also offer you as a resource Greg LeRoy and his organization Good Jobs First, who've done exhaustive research on this issue, might have some good policy guidance to you as you embark on a good way to establish your own criteria for assessing this review. And once we have our primer on tax breaks updated, we'll also make that available to the committee. With that, I'd be happy to take your questions.
Thank you. Does that primer include an answer to Representative Butler's earlier question about which breaks we ought to be looking at in particular?
Mr. Chair, we have a bill to do that we will be requesting again this session, as we did last session. Representative Buckley, I'm sure, will unveil that when it's in bill form. I'd hate to preempt him.
Thank you.
But we also, in our executive summary, say that there are a couple different approaches you could take to make that same case and to figure out the best way to do it. You can do it by percentage. You can do it by a scrutiny of the individual policies. You can do it by purpose. We went ahead and offered some courage and picked 13 purposes that appeared to us to represent good public policy. We believe that some of the breaks are on the book because of good policy, and some are on the books because of great lobbyists.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lori, you've described the 360 plus tax expenditures that we have on the books, and you've given us a fairly extensive list of criteria that you suggest be used to assess, I guess, the social value of many of these tax expenditures. Can you give us kind of a ballpark feel for how many of the 360 might not meet your criteria? And I suspect that some of them may in part meet them, others may not. And have you gone so far as to analyze how much revenue we're talking about here?
Mr. Chair and Representative, we did do that in 2003, and we are doing an update now, and there are a number of them that for expediency's sake, such as intangibles and federal property and all those kinds of things, you would certainly immediately remove those and not even have a conversation about those, I would expect, because they're just too hard to consider. But there are a number of others, and I think that some of that is subjective. Some of it is what do we consider to be the state's interest in the public policy goals expressed and the underlying reason for these. Who are the what are the purposes? Who are the beneficiaries? And then, of course, the modernization piece. We did find in our 2003 review that, surprisingly, few instances of documented connection between job creation and business tax breaks. But that doesn't mean that they were a high dollar amount. And I think Mr. Craven was accurate when he said that it's possible to overpromise and underdeliver if what you're looking for is a lot of money. Sometimes it's a matter of fairness or just good public policy.
Mr. Chairman,
thank you. Continue. Follow up.
Thank you. Any idea on some of the more egregious examples of expenditures that don't meet your criteria? Just an example or two of how much revenue we may be looking at here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Witt, we did come up with a modest list last session that created at the time, I think it was under $100 million in total reserves. And some of those had to do with offshoring jobs. Encouraging offshoring jobs did not seem to us a good public policy, for instance, in Oregon when we were having the highest unemployment rate in the nation just recently. So those are some of the kinds of ways that we took a look at the breaks. And again, some of those had to do with whether or not the policy stood up to scrutiny and not whether it generated a lot of dollars.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Berger?
Yeah, I have a comment, not necessarily a question. This is my third session spending 5 days a week in this committee, which is the committee that deals with tax expenditure reports. And I'm sort of reminded, this book reminds me a lot of the Bible. Everybody talks about it, but nobody reads it. And I have had endless list of people come in and say, just got rid of those corporate tax breaks, problem solved. And yet, in three sessions of sitting here, really only one has come before us for serious scrutiny, and that was the famous pollution control tax credit. So it is something that I believe we should look at and we should work on. But if I could go back to my Bible, you don't have to read the whole thing. You could probably just start with the Ten Commandments and do just fine. So if we are going to, let's not just build a bigger Bible here, okay? If there are specific tax breaks that we should be working on, identify them, bring them forward, and let's work on them. But I just don't believe building a bigger book is solving any problem. And when people come into my, three sessions I've had people march in and say, get rid of this tax breaks, and I pick up the book and I hand it to him and say, show me which one. Okay? And the only one that's ever been shown me is pleasure boats. We've had plenty of discussion about pleasure boats and pollution control tax breaks. So I guess maybe I'm not bound for the Revenue Committee another term. I don't know. But that's my general statement on the subject.
Thank you. Did you have one, Representative Rosenbaum?
I certainly could ask a question.
Only if you want to. I thought you had your hand up.
I do have a question, actually. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that you mentioned, Lori, the possibility of some sort of ways and means review of these. And I know that Representative Butler and I served together on the Audits Committee last legislative session, and there was some talk at the time about doing an audit, a more formal audit of some of these tax expenditures. And I'm wondering, either of you, what your opinion would be of the usefulness of doing that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rosenbaum, we believe that any legitimate scrutiny that takes a look at both the accountability and efficiency of each of these tax breaks is a reasonable thing to do. The reason we thought the Ways and Means process would be useful during session is that The question I think that Representative Butler mentioned earlier about weighing them against, I think that was who it was, weighing programs against tax breaks to see which is the better strategy for getting to where you want to go. But an audit serves a similar purpose or a related purpose, and we certainly don't disapprove of that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Representative Rosenbaum. I think tomorrow we're having a broad discussion about business taxation in this committee, so I hate to warn you that I may be back up here tomorrow on at a 10,000-foot level. And we will talk about that tomorrow, but, let's not forget, the important thing in this process is to, identify important public services, find the revenues to pay for them, and keep the focus maybe a bit more on the macro sense. I mean, we when we talk about various tax changes, we do always have to do the revenue estimate, and sometimes we tweak the language because we say, well, $2 million's too high, but if you get it to $1 million, we can pass the bill. And as your economists have told you over and over again, and then what happens? We were, doing angels on the heads of the pen last two sessions on various business tax issues. I mean, what happens is all of a sudden, with all these loss to the state predicted, the business cycle turns, and we're $275 million up over the estimate from corporate tax returns, thus the kicker debate. So, we are having some big policy discussions this session. You certainly had one last Friday and Monday on the whole reserve fund and kicker. We think that's appropriate, as we have said. Sometime down the road, we're probably going to have a discussion about corporate minimum tax, and we think that's appropriate and willing to engage in that. And I think that's where I would, if it was up to me, like your interim committee, to be working on more fundamental tax policy questions and maybe not get too distracted by the minute evaluations of 3.0.2.1 in the book. So that's just my thoughts, and I thank you for the time.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lori, thank you for the list from the Oregon Revenue Coalition as well. I think you've got nearly a dozen points listed down here, the things that you'd like to see tax expenditures, which would be proposals worthy of supporting to accomplish those goals. And I notice that as I go through these goals, there's taxes, tax credits and tax benefits associated with almost every one of them.
Right.
So I'm assuming that what you're recommending is that we not come in, for instance, to fight poverty and hunger, that we not try and restrict crop gleaning and some of those other kinds of things, or that we promote charitable giving, that we not do away with the charitable contribution tax benefit, those kinds of things.
Chair Barnhart and Vice Chair Butler, that's correct. We believe that there are good public policies behind a lot of these tax expenditures, and the question is not whether it's a good public policy, but whether this is the best way to achieve the objective. That's all.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
This is our new team.
Yes, I thought I might start something.
Chair, I noticed that they're color coordinated too.
They do appear to be. Are there others who are not signed up but who would like to be heard nevertheless on House Bill 2388? This is not the last that we will talk about tax expenditures this session. This bill in some ways is a medium to allow us to have the conversation. Lest anyone think that we haven't dealt sufficiently with the subject, don't worry, we will be back. And with that, we will close the public hearing. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me close the public hearing on House Bill 2388. Paul?
Mr. Chair, just to remind the committee that next week we'll have the release of the March revenue forecast on Thursday, March 1st. So our plan is to meet in the morning with the Senate Revenue Committee.
Oh, in the morning.
Senate Revenue
or
Finance
in
Committee in the morning at 8:45.
We'll have another joint meeting with the Senate Committee and to receive the revenue report. We'll hope for good news. Anything else? We continue to have full agendas this week. I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.